Dr. Stan here, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us right now on the line Sean McCumber. And Sean, well, he has an interesting story to tell. Sean, thank you so very much for being with us.
No problem. Appreciate the opportunity.
Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, who you are, and where you were on the morning of September 11th, 2001?
Well, I am a staff writer at the American Spectator magazine. I work out of the D.C. office, but currently I'm in New Hampshire covering the primary. And on September 11th, I was actually in a Russian class at the University of New Hampshire.
All right, tell me, what is your impression of what's happening as far as the what's going on as far as the primary is concerned?
Well, the primary actually just got a lot more interesting with the kind of big surprise in Iowa. So we're seeing a huge shift in the direction of all four of the major campaigns. We're seeing Kerry try and pick up some of the themes that Dean and Clark have been pressing on to try and pick up some of the people who are kind of scared away by Dean's post-Iowa performance. And we're seeing Edwards kind of also trying to pick up other issues, especially national security issues, which up until now he's pretty much avoided. So it's interesting. You know, we got people fighting for the mantle of underdog here. John Kerry and Howard Dean have both said, "I'm the underdog in this race." And so there's kind of this, you know, like I've been telling people, I think after Iowa, there's a real chance for Dean to turn that loss into a more definite victory in New Hampshire. But he squandered that by you know, acting like such a maniac afterwards, and he's dropped. He's had a pretty severe drop in the polls here just over the last couple of days. Tied into that, I think if he had given a more gracious speech at the end, if he had congratulated Edwards or Kerry, you know, that would have given an opportunity to show a more human side of himself. Instead, he went nuts and he basically looked like what Democrats were always afraid he was, which is someone who's unstable. So he's tried to tone it back. I saw him about 12 hours after Iowa. And the first thing he said was, you know, people expecting to hear red meat rhetoric today are not going to. They're going to be disappointed. So.
Well, of course, there's one candidate that I believe has already been selected to be the nominee by what I believe are the people who really make the decisions, not necessarily the voters. And when we get back, we'll ask Sean a little bit about that and then about a fascinating article he's written for the American Spectator. But right now, we're going to have to, of course, let our listeners there at Genesis go and bring on board our listeners from the mid-central coast here of California and other networks. And then, of course, when we get back, we'll begin to develop all of these ideas right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty and coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it will be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. Well, our guest this afternoon is Sean McCumber, and he's a writer for the American Spectator magazine. And we're going to be talking to him in just a few minutes about an interesting article he had written, which I've read, which I thought was interestingly enough we should talk about it. But he is right, of course, on the front lines of the primary elections as they're being worked out at the present time. And he was in Iowa, the Iowa caucus. Now we're going into the New Hampshire vote. When is the New Hampshire vote going to be?
What's the New Hampshire vote going to be? It's hard to say at this point.
But when is it going to take place?
A week from today.
Well, now, what's your impression of General Wesley Clark?
Well, my impression of Clark is that he is probably the strongest candidate the Democrats could field against George W. Bush. About a year ago, I saw Clark. He came to the university here to speak about his book. And he gave this really good speech, talking. You know, I disagreed with his thesis, but he gave a strong talk and he was very personable. And I noticed that he was really going after Bush. And so I said, you know, I went back to my editor at the paper I was working at the time, and I said, "Geez, you know, I think this guy's going to run for president." And they said, "No." So didn't happen then, but. I kept him in the back of my mind, and obviously a lot of people started to take notice of him. And, you know, when he first announced his candidacy, I really thought it would be something that would blow Dean out of the water. But then Clark had all these missteps and kind of floundered for a long time. That's all changed. He has definitely picked up the mechanisms of good campaigning, and he's having a huge effect here. The biggest rally I've been to was a Clark rally. It was about 2,000 people, all just going crazy at every word he said. You know, he's shooting up in the polls here, and I think when he goes south with this bounce from New Hampshire, whether he wins or not, I think he's a formidable candidate, definitely.
Well, I think you can pretty well tell by reading the newspapers who the establishment has picked. And their candidate is General Wesley Clark. We'll be back here in just a moment with Sean McCumber and talking about... Well, Dr. Stan back here. Sean McCumber works for the American Spectator, or writes for the American Spectator. Are you employed by American Spectator or just write articles for them?
No, I'm employed. I'm a staff writer there.
All right, fine. Well, now, what was this article that you'd written that we were going to be talking about this afternoon?
The Abdurrahman Al-Mahdi article?
Yes, let's talk about this rather unusual individual that you've written so well about.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Abdurrahman Al-Mahdi, founder of the American Muslim Council in D.C., kind of a hotshot Washington socialite type. You know, was friendly with Al Gore, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, George W. Bush, a slew of senators and congressmen, even state Senate candidates around the country, got money from this guy and, you know, took the opportunity to have their picture taken with him. It's all over the national news. He's a goodwill ambassador to the UN, appointed by Clinton in 1997. And yet, at the end of the summer, he was caught at Heathrow Airport in London with $340,000 in cash that he had not declared. So British customs officials interrogate him. It turns out this money is from the World Islamic Call Society, which is the jihad arm of the Libyan government. And he openly admits to the British customs officials that his plan was to bring this money to banks in Saudi Arabia and funnel it back here to the U.S. in smaller amounts.
Well, now, to be coming back to America, push the Muslim religion, or to begin training people in this radical form of Islam, which is what they practice in Saudi Arabia, the so-called Wahhabism.
Well, his plan, I think, mostly was to spread this money around to candidates, which obviously raises the kind of daunting issue of, you know, who's funding our political process. I don't know about you. I don't feel comfortable with the Libyan government, a state sponsor of terrorists, giving money that eventually ends up in our candidates' coffers. And I mean, he had a lot of issues, pet issues that he really pushed the candidates he gave to on. One of them was, you know, military chaplains. He founded one of the two organizations that can, you know, get Muslim clerics into the military service. We've seen the end result of this, of course, with, you know, some of the problems they've had with Captain James Yee and a couple other chaplains.
They're talking about at Guantanamo Base, where
right.
Here's this man who's a Muslim chaplain who is taking classified documents and a very serious question, at least initially, that he was a spy for Al-Qaeda working at the Guantanamo base there in Cuba.
Right. No, absolutely. So, I mean, and another thing that Al-Amoudi was pushing during the 2000 election was, you know, more stringent rules against questioning Muslims at airports and people of Arab descent, that sort of thing.
In other words, we ought to get the little white-haired old grandmother from Ireland, but we certainly would never want to get a swarthy Islamic terrorist and question him because we might infringe upon his constitutional rights.
Right, or the government might get sued.
What I mean, see, this is the height of ridiculousness. If I was a Muslim living in America today, I would want them to be questioning the Muslims, because if they were terrorists, I wouldn't want them blowing up the plane I was going to be on. And I would think that responsible Muslims realize that what we're doing is the most ridiculous thing in the world, treating everybody as they're a terrorist, and, of course, specifically avoiding questioning those who come from countries that support Islamic terrorism. This is madness, unless there's another agenda behind what's going on, of course.
No, it's absolutely crazy, and I think that, you know, one thing I'd like to point out when I talk about the Al-Amoudi article is that some of the people that helped me the most with this are moderate Muslim groups who, you know, don't have much of a voice in Washington, D.C., because politicians and the political power structure in D.C. have gotten in bed with guys like Al-Amoudi, who have tons of this Wahhabi money to put on fancy conferences to basically get a voice bigger than their numbers. And the moderate Muslims, who are the majority of Muslims in America, end up, you know, horrified at the fact that guys like Al-Amoudi, who, I mean, Al-Amoudi, as my article points out, praised terrorism constantly for basically all of the 90s. And, you know, at the same time, he's being invited to the White House.
It sort of makes you wonder what's really going on, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a strange set of circumstances, I'll give you that, definitely.
Well, now, of course, here in Washington, D.C., or there in Washington, D.C., there's a man named Grover Norquist, who's one of the leaders of the conservative movement. He's gotten a lot of money from the Muslims to try to influence our policies, hasn't he?
He's one of the founding chairmen of, or founding board members of Islamic Institute.
What is it?
Is this run by several people who used to be involved with Al-Amoudi. And, you know, which has a lot of the same causes as Al-Amoudi.
And so here is a gentleman, I know Grover Norquist, a very likable individual, but certainly he has been a paid spokesman for the radical Islamic movement with our administration, trying to keep them from doing what's logical if we're really involved in a war on terrorism.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously Grover wouldn't see it that way. I think Grover really... is attempting, and as you said, Grover's a great guy. Grover has done many good things for conservative causes, and I think he really does see the potential for a center-right coalition with Muslim Americans, and that's fine. But when he takes money from Abdurrahman Al-Amoudi, for example, you know, he should come out and just say, look, it was a mistake. I don't think there's any way that Grover Norquist would really be interested in being involved in any sort of Islamic terrorism. I think he's purely got his mindset on, you know, the voting patterns of Muslim Americans.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think he's a man. He's one of the major designers of the current Republican strategy. But, you know, when somebody gives you money, why you're subservient to them, and it's as old as he who plays the piper calls the tune. And right. I think you have to be very careful when you take money from anybody that has an agenda, because then you are subservient to their agenda. And at times like this, I hate to have one of the key designers of the Republican strategy, at least subservient to certain elements within the Muslim community. Now, is most of the money that he's getting from the more conservative, the more liberal branch of the Muslim, do you know?
Yeah, it is from the more liberal branch, the more moderate branch, definitely.
All right.
I think what concerns people, you know, the Grover Norquist angle of this story has really gotten a lot of play among conservatives, and let me tell you why I think that is. I don't really think it has anything to do with the cash or with Al-Moody, although I think people would have preferred it if Grover just came out and said, look, this was a bad guy, but this is what I'm trying to do. It's ultimately a good thing. Instead, and as a conservative, Grover Norquist should understand what it's like to be, you know, dismissed with kind of loaded terms. Grover turned around and used these terms on other conservatives, terms like bigot, anti-Muslim bigot, racist, this sort of loaded language that he used to describe other conservatives and lock them out of his Wednesday morning meetings, very influential meetings. This I think is really at the heart of why the Grover Norquist side of this is getting so much press, because you know it's just, you have to be wary of anybody who dismisses an argument rather than answers it. Conservatives obviously had a good point about Al-Moody and about, you know, the concern about radical Islam infiltrating American politics, and yet Grover chose to dismiss these arguments using loaded terms, and I think that's really what that side of the story is all about.
For our listeners out there, on a regular weekly basis, every Wednesday morning, Grover has a meeting at his office, and everybody who is anybody within the conservative Republican movement is invited to that meeting. And then they discuss about strategy and what's going to happen the following week. But this is sort of a status symbol to be there with rubbing shoulders with all the other Republicans. Incidentally, I have never been there myself, although I have been invited. But I think that the problem that we face, you know, is basically that when you begin shutting people out, when you're in a position of power and you shut people out because they're critical of something you have done which is wrong, then we're in real trouble. Now, what's happened to this gentleman, Al-Moody?
Well, what happened was he left London. The British seized the $340,000. They also found three passports on him. Two American passports and a Yemeni passport. And one of those passports was kind of a clean passport, you know, one that he could use so that when he came back through American customs, nobody would know where he'd been. Well, American customs officials were obviously tipped off about this. So he left London, he went to Egypt, Syria, Libya, you know, he was all over the place, all these hot spots. Shows up back in the United States, says he's only been to Saudi Arabia and London, or England. And so American customs officials already had caught him in this lie, they talked to him about the money. Well, he got put in jail, you know, they go through his offices, and the end result is an 18-count indictment. He's sitting in Alexandria, Virginia jail cell right now, and the judge has determined that he is a flight risk, so he's not able to get bail, and he's kind of just waiting, I assume, until a trial, unless he's able to cut some sort of deal with the government.
Well, now, is he an American citizen or not?
He is. He's a naturalized citizen, naturalized in 91.
But, of course, he was very close to both the Clinton and the Bush administration.
Well, he was much closer to the Clinton administration, yes, but, I mean, you know, for example, he was at the prayer breakfast after September 11th, you know, September 13th or whatever it was.
And he's been invited to the White House as a guest?
Many, many times, yeah. He drew up the first guest list for the White House's first celebration of Ramadan for Hillary Clinton in 93. There's pictures of him with Al Gore and Bill Clinton and, you know, he sent talking points to Hillary Clinton. Lots of involvement.
We'll be back here in just a moment. A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991. It tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is radio health journalist Bill Sardi. Hey, a lot of smart supplement users like to check out the facts before they purchase an herbal product. So go to www.lifespannnutrition.com and read all about Alamax, the new odorless, 100% pure Allicin garlic extract imported from Great Britain. You'll find Alamax is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Check it out at www.lifespannnutrition.com or call 866-405-4000 to learn more about this breakthrough in garlic technology called Alamax. Call 1-866-405-4000 today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to tell you about some of the items that we have here at Radio Liberty, which we hope that you'll want to get. And one of the most important things that will help you to better understand what's really going on is my story of the Brotherhood of Darkness. And people very often look and see what's happening, and they don't understand who it would be who would pick a man like, for instance, General Clark, Wesley Clark. 7 days after he announced that he was going to run for the presidency, his face was on the front of Newsweek magazine. Do you really believe that happened just by accident? No, there's a force behind General Clark, just as there are a force behind certain people who are propelled into positions of power, whether they be the Bill Clintons or George Bushes or Wesley Clark, for that matter. So to understand this, you need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get the book, or you can get the video, or you can get them both together, or you can get the special, which includes the book, the video, and an audio tape for $29.95 by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. More. If you wonder at all what's really going on over in Middle East, why our troops are there, you need to get my video, Iraq, the Untold Story, because it's the result and result of my 40 or more years of study. And we give you the documents going into the background, say the Japanese effort to repeated efforts to surrender at the end of the Second World War, and we wouldn't let them. They tried, I think it was 7 times over 5 months to surrender. The invasion of Iwo Jima and Nagasaki, part of the invasion of Iwo Jima and Okinawa, dropping the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were unnecessary. You'll see the documentation of all of this in our syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story. You'll see the plans for the war with Iraq in 1998. You'll actually see their writings, this group known as the Project for the New American Century, which included Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and John Bolton and Paul Wolfowitz, writing in 1998 demanding that President Clinton attack Iraq. So you need to have the background. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, Iraq, the Untold Story. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and we're talking with Sean McCumber, who's a staff writer for the American Spectator. And if you're out there across America and you have a question or a comment, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But if you study the Islamic terrorist movement in the United States, all during the 1990s, they knew it was here. These people were, I don't know how many of our listeners have seen the video, a Jihad in America, put out by Stephen Emerson, of course, was actively suppressed, probably by the CIA in 1994. It was shown one time on PBS and then never allowed to be shown in America again. Could be shown in other countries, but not here. But you had these leading Islamic people coming here and saying, we've got to have blood flowing in the streets of America. And of course, these people are being financed right here in America from the various Islamic movements. And here you have one of their representatives going to the White House, and nothing is being done. And they're talking about the terrorist threat, the threat of Christian terrorists or militia terrorists, and nothing is being said about this Islamic terrorist threat. And so this gentleman, of course, was eventually arrested. And do you think he's going to be deported now? It would seem to me that if he was planning on bringing money into this country illegally, he should be sent to prison.
Yeah, well, I think that'll be the end result. I think he'll probably end up in a federal jail. I honestly don't think that we've seen the last of the charges for Alamoudi. I think that right now the FBI is probably going through, you know, countless files and paper and all sorts of things that I think they're probably looking through connected with him. And I think it'll be a while yet before we see a trial, because I really do think there'll probably be more charges before it's over.
Well, what's really so interesting to me, Sean, is the fact that we're not reading about this in the New York Times, which I read regularly, or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal. So people are going to have to go to a magazine such as yours, as the American Spectator, to get the story of this very, very prominent radical Islamic person who supports Islamic terrorism, who's very close to Hillary and Bill Clinton, and also has connections to the Bush White House. And now that he's been exposed, and it's very obvious, it's almost like there's a conspiracy of silence. Now, of course, you're back there in Washington, D.C., and you probably have a different view of things than we do out here in the hinterlands. But as you talk to people across America, have you found many people who say, I never heard of this guy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that one of the reasons is, as far as political reporting goes in the national media, I think that often the stories that get told are stories that are, you know, fed to the media by one party or the other. But what motivation would one party or the other have to make a big deal out of this? Because there's no political gain in it. Both parties were involved. You know, politicians from, you know, conservative John Sununu up here in New Hampshire, all the way down to, you know, crazy leftist Cynthia McKinney. You know, I'll get money from this guy. So it's kind of like, you know, where's the political momentum to get involved in an argument like that?
So what you're saying is he was giving money to John Sununu, who was very, very close to the current administration, the Bush administration, and he was giving money to McKinney, a left-wing Democrat there from the South?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, where was he getting all of this money? You know, because you got to have somebody's got to be behind you if you're giving a lot of money to American politicians.
Well, that's a big mystery here. I mean, he was caught with this money from Libya, okay? And he told British customs officials that he might have done this a few other times, and that he had done this a few other times with smaller amounts of money. But the truth is, it's a big open question, and there's people who used to work at the American Muslim Council, who would ask him about these finances, ask him where the money was coming from, where it was going, you know, how much money the council had. These are board members who he would not tell, you know, he would not answer their questions.
Well, now, is the American Muslim Council a moderate organization, a very, very conservative organization? Is it a terrorist or a front for terrorism? What is the American Muslim Council?
Well, the American Muslim Council has actually lost a lot of its clout. But at the height, it was considered, well, what FBI Director Robert Mueller called it was the most mainstream Muslim group in America.
In other words, it was a moderate Muslim group.
Yeah, but clearly that was not the case. When you look at after September 11th, for example, the website of the American Muslim Council advised Muslims not to help the FBI in the investigation of September 11th.
Yeah, so that's what our the director of the CIA calls moderate, or the director of the FBI calls moderate.
Right. Actually, Robert Mueller was actually the keynote speaker at this at the AMC's 2002 summer convention.
2002, that's after the 9/11 attack.
Right, right.
And of course, they're telling their people not to cooperate. We'll be back in just a moment.
you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Carsbrook, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Carsbrook, Ear to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me just mention several of the other things we carry. We carry a Phenopoly. Phenopoly is a wonderful program. It's basically a plays like a board game, like Monopoly. And yet, of course, in 16 hours, you can undo all the harm that's been done to the mind and heart of our children as far as reading is concerned. And you can begin to get a child reading phonetically and bringing them from the lower quarter or lower 5 or 10% of the readers right up to the top 25%, right up to the top 15% or 20%, and it's a very, very simple thing to do, and it's a fun game to play. I've played it. I think you'll enjoy it. It teaches you how to begin to read phonetically and spell phonetically and break words down and then, of course, pronounce them phonetically. Most of these programs are $300, $400, $500, $600. This one is $139.95, and we even throw a couple of books in with that. We think it's a great deal. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for Phenopoly. And then, of course, we also carry Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims for them, but we can tell you that the people who use these products love them. And this really helps us to keep on the air here. There's a regular soap. There's a moisturizing soap. Now, Barbara uses that regular soap. She cleans the counters with it. It seems to help keep away some of the ants and other things. They don't seem to like it. The moisturizing soap I've used routinely now for several years. It certainly helped me personally as far as a rash that I had. And we hear this from so many other people. And then there's a gel. It's a soothing gel. And whatever you have, it seems that that gel is good for. I know some people like to use it for acne or rashes. And we can do is say, try it and see if you like it and if it works for you. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask about the Miracle 2 soap products. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Sean McComber. If you're out across America and you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So let's get this straight. We have this man. He seems to be supporting terrorism. He's leading the Muslim Council. He's playing shoulder games or rubbing shoulders with Hillary Clinton and then the Bush administration. And yet now, of course, it's finding out that he's getting money from terrorist nations and bringing it in here to give to politicians to buy favors. Is that a fairly fair statement?
Yeah, well, we don't know exactly what he's planning on doing with the money, but what he did with the money he had was spread it around to politicians and political action committees and all the sort of influential groups and people.
Now, one of the points you made, though, was that this Muslim Council, after 9/11, was telling the Muslims across America, don't cooperate with the FBI, don't cooperate with the American government. I mean, you would think the first thing they would want to do is get rid of the terrorists so we would not have this friction between Muslims and Christians in this country. Right. And then after they've done something like that, why, Robert Mueller is willing to go and talk to them as the featured speaker?
Yeah, I mean, he made a comment during his speech about how people in the AMC in the past had supported terrorism and that they shouldn't do that. But that he was willing to come there despite the critics, because people put up a real uproar when he decided to do this for the obvious reasons.
Well, how about having maybe going to speak to the American militia, the right-wing militia, or maybe the Ku Klux Klan or something like that? Wouldn't that be pretty comparable?
Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely, there's no logical reason for why he had to choose that organization. You know, there are plenty of moderate Muslim groups in America, as I've said. They don't get any recognition because they don't have the same sort of cash, and that is what it's coming down to, essentially. I mean, he could have gone and spoke to the Islamic Supreme Council of the United States, whose leader, Sheikh Kabbani, you know, and he actually is written up quite extensively in Stephen Emerson's Jihad in America book, because this is a guy who went to Congress 2 years before September 11th and said, look, you have to look out for Osama bin Laden. You have to look out for Islamic terrorists in the United States. You know, I would think that group is more deserving of a visit from the FBI than a group that, you know, refuses to call Hamas a terrorist organization, that, you know, openly criticized Bill Clinton for meeting with Salman Rushdie and compared the satanic verses to the Holocaust. You know, a group that tried to impede the FBI's investigation into September 11th. I mean, when you look at the two, it really makes no sense why the FBI director should be going to, you know, if they feel like they need to reach out to the Muslim community, they're going about it the wrong way.
Well, you know, we always start our programs by saying reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. And you point out what's going on, and you wonder, how in heaven's name could these things be going on in America today? They don't make sense. And if you understand they're not supposed to make sense, then it all makes sense. Well, yeah. The book you mentioned by Stephen Emerson, The American Jihad, we incidentally carry that book, and we recommend that you and the audience get it. He actually quotes another one of his friends who in 1996 went before the Senate Intelligence Committee and talked about the radical Islamic movement throughout the world and how it was being financed right here in the United States by radical Islamic movements and organizations. And this man was risking his life to testify before Congress, and not a word of that ever got to the public, although the entire text of his testimony is right there in the book. And if you'd like to get that book, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's The American Jihad by Stephen Emerson, a very important book. I'm sure you're well acquainted with Stephen Emerson's work.
Absolutely, yeah. He helped me out. He helped me out on this article, especially. Very, very good guy. Definitely a very brave man. Knows his stuff. But as you just said, there are a few books out there really that really capture what's going on, as well as American Jihad. And also, I would recommend Kenneth Timmerman's Preachers of Hate.
In fact, I agree with you totally. They're both excellent, excellent books. And Timmerman we've had as a guest on several times, talking about his book, Preachers of Hate, a very important book for people to understand that there is within the very substance of the religion. Now, not that most Muslims really embrace this, but there is within the very structure of the religion an intense hatred of Jews and of Christians, and of course this call for jihad and to die in battle, killing the enemies of Allah.
I think you made a good point earlier about the money coming through these American organizations, and I think you saw that, and I think you saw that the United States government has understood this for a long time, because after September 11th, I mean, besides going in Afghanistan, the very next thing we did was raid a lot of these, you know, so-called Muslim charity organizations that actually funnel most of their money to groups like Hamas and Hezbollah. So, I mean, I think the government understands the problem. I just don't think they're, you know, have the backbone to deal with it fully.
Well, of course, what really bothers me, Sean, is that they knew this before September 11th, and they did nothing about the financing of this Islamic terrorist movement from right here in the United States. In fact, we carry a book, Dollars for Terror, written by a Swiss journalist who spent 4 years touring the Middle East, and because one of his friends had been killed by the Islamic terrorist, a Muslim in Algeria. And so after 4 years, and he writes the book in 1999, and he says, who is financing this radical Islamic terrorist movement headed by Osama bin Laden? Why, he says it's Pakistani intelligence, which works very closely with the CIA, the Saudi Arabian government, And, of course, the CIA in certain areas is involved with this whole movement. So maybe that sort of puts a little different slant on why we did nothing before 9/11. And even after 9/11, we let people like this gentleman you're describing continue to operate at the highest levels of our government, bringing in money and giving it to politicians in both political parties.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a huge, huge problem. I think before September 11th, you know, essentially nobody thought that something that big could happen. But, you know, when you just look at all the attacks in the years leading up to September 11th and the men and women in the military who were killed and, you know, these embassies blown up, I mean, I think we really had a moral responsibility to act on it before September 11th. But especially post-September 11th, there's really no excuse.
Well, what really bothers me most is the fact that Osama bin Laden, if we're to believe what we're told, and I think that there's probably a large element of truth in it, Osama bin Laden was intimately involved with planning and supervising the attack on the World Trade Center. And yet, we didn't go after him when we went into Afghanistan. We have a book, I don't know if you know, do you know Paul Sperry, who is senior editor or senior writer for WorldNet Daily there in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I've seen some of his work, I believe.
And, of course, in his book, Crude Politics, he points out that the Green Berets who were sent into Afghanistan weren't allowed to go after Osama bin Laden. What's wrong with this picture? I thought that we went into Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden, and we weren't allowed to get him, and then he escapes. What does that tell you about what the real goal was for what's happening there? Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the article you wrote on this this gentleman? How do you pronounce his last name?
Alamoudi. Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, the story of Alamoudi is over, essentially. I mean, the man is in jail. Even if by some miracle he, you know, gets out of this 18-count indictment, which I don't think he will, you know, nobody would ever touch him again. So the point of my article is not necessarily about one person. It's about how did this happen, and how can we make sure it doesn't happen again? If no one is made to ever answer for this, yeah, the politician sent the money back. You know, after he gets up and says he's a supporter of Hezbollah and gets caught with this money, you know, after he gets arrested, sure, they send it back then. That's not enough. They need to tell us, you know, why they got in bed with this guy in the first place. And that's not necessarily something that's going to bring down somebody's career. That's just something where you say, look, I made a mistake. This is how it happened. This is how I make sure it won't happen again. Nobody has given any substantive answer as to, you know, what they're doing to make sure they're not involved with this, you know, another Alamoudi somewhere. So in writing the article, that's what my ultimate hope is. I mean, it's an interesting story, the story of Alamoudi, but it's over. The question is, the story's more about, here's something that happened, it shouldn't have, and we need to make the people who are supposed to represent us in D.C. answer for, you know, as to how this won't happen again.
Amen to that. And, of course, if you don't learn from the mistakes of the past, then you're going to keep repeating them over and over again. Now, how can people get the American Spectator magazine, or is your article up on the web?
Yeah, it's up on the web, and it's in the December-January issue, which is on newsstands now. On the web, it's www.spectator.org. I also have daily updates on the primary through primary. And people who want to subscribe but don't have access to the Internet can also call 1-800-524-3469.
Give that one more time, 800-524?
800-524-3469.
All right, fine. Well, let's talk with a few minutes we have left here. What do you think is going to happen in the Democratic nomination process? We've talked a little bit about Wesley Clark. Do you think that he may be the candidate or not?
I think he is still a bit of a long shot, but I think that if he has a really strong second place or even a win in New Hampshire, then he has a very good shot down in the South. Especially if Dean loses all his momentum. If Dean wins in New Hampshire, then he's still a player. If he loses in New Hampshire, then he's lost the expectations game, and I think it's going to be hard for him to win in any states after that. And likewise, if Kerry wins New Hampshire, then he's won Iowa and New Hampshire, and suddenly, you know, he'll be a real fighter against Clark. But if you see a split here where Dean wins New Hampshire, you know, Kerry won Iowa, then going into the South, I really think it'd be wide open, and I think that's the kind of opportunity that guys like Edwards and Clark are really looking for, you know, getting down in their backyard.
No, I think that people have to understand that Clark did not run in Iowa. He did not enter that at all. For he didn't feel that that was important, at least not as far as his candidacy. He has been emphasizing, though, New Hampshire, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's very active here. He actually canceled some Hollywood fundraising when his poll numbers started to go up here so he could spend more time here. So, I mean, he really is starting, you know, I don't think when he got in that, I think he was hoping for, you know, third place, something strong enough to push him down south. But I think now he's looking for a win. And, you know, if it comes down to Clark and Dean tangling with each other, I mean, they're both egomaniacs. They're both very condescending people. And I think that would be a very bitter fight. There would be none of the kind of collegiality that you see between Kerry and Edwards. You know, I think that would be a fairly rough and tumble primary season if that were to be the case.
Well, you know, you're not as old as I am, Sean, I suspect. But I've been around for, well, I've been involved in this battle for well over 40 years, over half my life. And I can remember when Dwight David Eisenhower was running for the presidency. And, of course, we were involved in a war in Korea at that time, and it was a very unpopular war. The American people didn't want to be at war in Korea. And the casualty list was mounting, and there was just sort of a feeling of hopelessness. And we were looking for a strong leader who was going to get us out of Korea. And the interesting thing that Eisenhower, like Wesley Clark, had never been involved in politics. In fact, nobody knew whether Eisenhower is really a Republican or a Democrat. In fact, Clark has made the remark the reason he's a Democrat is because Karl Rove of the Republican Party wouldn't return one of his telephone calls. Uh-huh. Clark is not an ideological Democrat. He's not an ideological Republican. He is dedicated, I believe, to a different agenda. As you know, he's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And there's a great deal of power behind this man. And he's raising money. And of course, he is getting more publicity. If you read the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, as I do on a regular basis, he's getting far more mentioned there than probably almost all the other Democrat candidates put together. Have you noticed that?
Absolutely, and like I said, I've also noticed that his turnouts in New Hampshire are reflecting that. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, I think a lot of the press has gone from, in the beginning, they were very excited about Dean. All the pundits said, watch Dean, watch Dean, watch Dean. And there is this aspect of a self-fulfilling prophecy for it. And, you know, when the media got bored with a year of Dean, 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 and Dean was 20 points ahead, I think Clark came around along at the right time for the media to say, here's the anti-Dean, here's the anti-Dean, you know. And so I think he's definitely getting a bounce. And as you said, he's got very powerful friends, and that certainly is not hurting him one bit.
And apparently the Clintons are working, at least we're told, working fairly close with him. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I mean, a lot of former Clinton people have come out in favor of Clark. A lot of their fundraisers, you know, have worked with him. I think the Clintons have less of an interest in Wesley Clark and more of an interest in making sure Dean is not the guy, because Dean is very unfriendly towards the Clinton years. You know, he speaks very harshly about Democrats during that period, and he's threatened to fire Terry McAuliffe, the Clintons person in the DNC, and so I think that the Clintons really have a vested interest in making sure that Dean is not the standard bearer of the party, and I think that's why people thought it was such a big deal that Al Gore endorsed Dean, you know, a few blocks away from Clinton's office in Harlem, because it's obvious that Gore has thrown his lot in with the Dean side of things.
And yet, of course, there seems to be sort of a split in the Democratic Party, with Clinton at least giving some tacit approval or tacit support to General Wesley Clark, who suddenly has become a Democrat, who suddenly is the candidate for the presidency of the United States. And the only question is, who's putting up the money? Who's really behind it? And is this a part of something far larger than we imagine? Well, Sean, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure. And again, people can get your material at what telephone number?
Well, they can go to www.spectator.org, or they can call 1-800-524-3469.
And, of course, it's a fascinating article about Al Mahdi. So we recommend it to you. Thanks so much for being with us, Sean.
I appreciate it. Bye. I hope to be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 on the route down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working with the Oklahoma City bombing. And this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book anywhere that will give you a more contemporary history, frightening history, that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention some of the other items that you can get from Radio Liberty you're not going to be able to get elsewhere. And to really understand what's going on today, let me suggest several books by Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Secret Records Revealed, one of the best books we have, giving you some insight of what's going on behind the scenes. That's Secret Records Revealed. And, of course, we also carry Dr. Cuddy's book, Now is the Dawning, and his book on the NEA, his timeline on what's happened as far as our educational system, and of course his book, Fabian Freeway, or A Road to Socialism, I believe is the title of it. An excellent book going into the background of the movement, in other words, is creating a socialist America. And what people really don't understand is that the socialism that is being brought has nothing to do with the theoretical socialism of Karl Marx, but the centralization of power with government and under the name of democracy. And yet, of course, our politicians are controlled by the people who buy and sell them. So what you're really doing is establishing a society where you have a ruling elite that can buy and sell the politicians, and freedom is progressively lost. And this is the antithesis of the American system, where the power of the central government was limited. So remember those books, Secret Records Revealed, Now is the Dawning, the NEA, a timeline as far as education is concerned, and lastly, The Road to Socialism, all by Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Excellent books, and so many other material you can get from Radio Liberty. And if you'd like a copy of our catalog, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, or certainly go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com, and we have, of course, there laid out a list of books which we think are must reading, especially those that go into how we financed our enemies. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when I have to remind all of you out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help. If you believe that you're going to get information here, you're not going to get elsewhere. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day by radio, by shortwave, by internet, by satellite, beginning to reach an increasing number of people with an awareness. Just the other day, we got information from people in Switzerland who are listening, in Great Britain who are listening, in Canada who are listening, in New Zealand who are listening. I mean, this is just within the last 24 hours. So we know that they're out there listening, and when you join the Radio Liberty family, you help us. Now, if you'd like to get a free copy of our December newsletter, and this explains to you why the Supreme Court took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, and really what's behind this whole effort to keep the Judge Roy Moore from displaying the Ten Commandment monument there at the Supreme Court building in Mobile, Alabama. If you'd like to really understand why, not everybody knows the Supreme Court took God and prayer out, but it had nothing to do with the wall of separation between church and state, but another, far more sinister agenda. Well, it's all laid out in my December newsletter, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy if you give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Of course, if you have access to a computer, you can go up to my website, and that's radioliberty.com, and you can actually pull that down. You can actually pull down our December newsletter. We give you our permission to copy it and to distribute any of the material that is on my website. Because, of course, we're involved in an ideological battle. It's being fought with truth. It's being fought with tape sets. It's being taught with videos. It's being fought with newsletters. It's being fought with books. And you have to help us get that information out. Go to our website, and of course you can listen to our live programs 5 hours a day. Then, of course, when we're not on live, you can go to our archive programs. You can listen to those. And then, of course, you can certainly go and look at all the various products we have. And some of those do help to keep us on the air. And we do carry the Berkey products. And if you buy them through us, the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light, you get a free video or four-tape set that we produced as a reward for coming through us. And so if you'd like to know more about the Berkey products, look at our site up there at radioliberty.com. And then, of course, your job is to tell others about our programs, to tell others about our website, to get them listening there and beginning to understand what is truly going on today. So if you will, you know, make it a point to tell others about our website. In fact, I had a woman call me from the South just this afternoon, and she told me that there's a church upstate from where she is that they've gotten my videos of the Brotherhood of Darkness and 9-1-1 prior knowledge and the war in Iraq and the other videos that we suggest, and they're showing them in the church that is there, and what a profound impact they're having, and of course how excited the people are to begin to realize that they understand, and most people out across America don't. If you haven't seen our new videos, Diaprax, that's D-I-A-P-R-A-X, Diaprax in the church, it's the story of the church growth movement, or Megiddo, the March to Armageddon. A 2-hour and 20-minute excellent video, very professionally done, going into the spiritual and geopolitical forces that are at work in the world today. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we hope that you'll get these various items we talk about. And, of course, we ask you also to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival, because I'm firmly convinced if the American people don't turn back to God, God is going to abandon this nation. And lastly, we ask you to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.